Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. On the heels of the strike being over, we're starting to get some news about, like, shows that are coming back or not coming back or whatever, and the one that everyone is talking about this week is an offhand comment that Nicole Kidman made recently saying that a third season of Big Little Lies is coming. And I should have looked this up before I started the podcast, but I forget when season two aired, but it was for sure pre-pandemic. So minimum 4 years ago at this point, and I think it was even longer, maybe like, was it in 2018 or summer of 2019, something like that. So it's been a very long time since we got season two, which I don't know how many of you watched that show, but the first season of Big Little Lies was great. I loved the first season. I thought especially the acting was really great. Nicole Kidman was great. Alexander Skarsgård was great. He won an Emmy. Nicole Kidman might have won an Emmy too. I forget. Reese Witherspoon was great. Zoe Kravitz was great. The kids were great. Adam Scott was great. Like, it was just, especially as, and Shailene Woodley. Oh, she was so good too. So as like a vehicle for really strong acting, I thought Big Little Lies was wonderful. And it kind of fell right in the middle of that wave of prestige genre based on books where, you know, you have like a really talented director who gives you like a lot of seascapes and a lot of like really long tracking shots of people staring out windows and contemplating. And but then it's also all wrapped up in a mystery. So it really hit on like the domestic and the mystery, which has been a huge boon in, why do I love that word so much the past couple of weeks? Boon. I don't know. I don't know why I do, but I know I said it last week too. Boon. But, you know, like that's been a big thing in publishing, especially, God, probably since Gone Girl, Girl on the Train, all the girl books. And it's starting, it was starting to translate around that time pretty extensively to television, especially on networks like HBO, you know, and then we got like Nine Perfect Strangers on Hulu and all that stuff. But since that ended, then we got season two, which was not based on a book. Season one covered the book. Season two then introduced Meryl Streep, who you've definitely seen the meme of her screaming. That's from Big Little Lies season two, if you were not familiar. But the story, I don't even remember, other than that it was Meryl Streep was Alexander Skarsgård's mom and came back to figure out what really happened to her son. And that's about all I remember. I don't remember what the fuck else happened on that show. So, season two, not as good as season one, not as memorable. But, I mean, with any drama like that where you have all these big, huge stars coming together and starring in a show together, there's going to be interest in, you know, wanting to bring it back. So pretty immediately afterward, you know, we're thinking about a season three. And then the pandemic happened and then the strike happened. And I guess it never really took off. And then also the director, what was his name? Oh, my gosh. Why did I not look all this stuff up? But the director, who I also believe won an Emmy, passed away last year. He had a heart attack. So there's been, you know, there's no book to base it on. The director has passed away. We had all of these things standing in the way. But now that I guess we're like looking for things to kind of get people excited about paying all of this money for streaming services and stuff like that, I guess we're now looking to really move forward on a Big Little Lies season three. So it's we'll watch and see how that turns out. And then the other little piece of news for this week, again, going along with this, like, stuff is happening again. I mean, Hallmark canceled a series called Ride that had one season, if you care about that, and a couple other shows. Like, it was confirmed Young Sheldon, this is going to be its last season. SEAL Team on Paramount Plus, formerly of CBS, also got canceled. And then randomly Stars is bringing back Spartacus, which if you remember those shows, that was, God, that was on when I was in college, which was what, maybe like 15 years ago at this point, probably almost. Whew. Well, they're reviving it and bringing it back starring Asher. But like, you know, some moving and shaking. The the other news that was all over my personal social media feed this week is that Queer Eye on Netflix got renewed for season 9. Season 8 is premiering in January, they announced, and they're also now going to be filming a season 9. But Bobby Burke, the interior designer, is not coming back for season 9. And they did not announce a replacement, and they also didn't even really hint that they were going to replace him, which seemed super weird to me. Like, I can't imagine them, like, not having an interior designer or having a fifth person. Like, the whole thing is that they're the Fab Five, so I'm assuming they will find a fifth person. But there was nothing in any of the press materials announcing the new season or anything in any of the cast members, including Bobby's departure announcement, saying that, like, they were going to be casting for his replacement. And if you read any of their books, which, you know, whatever year that was that they blew up after that first season, I think they all released books. They all kind of talked about the audition process in it. Like, I read Karamo's and Jonathan's books, and they both kind of talked about how hard it was to find that chemistry for all five of them. So it's going to be weird, basically, is what it comes down to. And I've talked about Queer Eye on the podcast before, that it's kind of lost its luster for me. I never even finished season 7. I think I watched maybe 3 episodes of it. And I think the relentless positivity was something I really needed at a certain time. Like, when the first couple seasons came out, the positive queerness, the positive interactions with people, like the giving inspirational stories a platform and helping people who help others and helping people who really need the help, who are maybe overlooked quite often. That was all very nice and very sweet, but it was also very saccharine and kind of like, you know, too much candy gives you cavities kind of idea, that I think I just kind of grew out of it. But it is coming back. Season 8, like I said, premieres in January. They're going to be filming a season 9. I forget where they said season 8 is going to be. Maybe it's still in New Orleans. I don't remember. And we'll see what happens there. Okay. I've been complaining so much lately about how there's no TV to watch. And now all of a sudden, there's a million things that I want to watch and I don't have time to watch it. So this past week, Julia came back on HBO Max, which I want to watch, have not yet. A Murder at the End of the World started on Hulu. And I want to watch that, but haven't yet. And then this coming week, Good Burger 2 is coming out on Paramount Plus. My 90s Nickelodeon brain is exploding. I cannot freaking wait. That sequel has been in development for 26 years, something like that. Like, right after the original came out in 97, they were planning a second one. They even wrote a book, a novelization of it, called Good Burger 2 Go, and it was about Ed chasing down a customer all over the world who forgot his change. And that was supposed to be the movie too. So, like, this has been in development forever and we're finally getting it, and Kel Mitchell and Kenan Thompson are both in it, and Kenan has a book coming out in a couple weeks that I'm very excited about, and then Kel sadly was, like, just in the hospital recently. So I need good things. I need this to be good. I need it to make me happy. So that, and then, you know, all the Hallmark is coming this week because it's Thanksgiving week. I'll get to that at the end of the podcast. But there's just so much. Fargo is coming back this week. I forgot about Fargo. I love Fargo. There, like, all of a sudden, there's all this TV I want to watch, and I haven't had the time to watch it because of, you know, like, working. Thanks. When you're a teacher, Thanksgiving break is typically, okay, at a college. I mean, I won't speak for public school K-12 teachers, but when you work at a college or you teach at a college, Thanksgiving break is this really inconvenient, like, 2 days that you get off. At least this is in New Jersey. Like, you know, I teach at a community college in New Jersey, but I also went to a school. I went to college in New Jersey. So, and this was the same schedule across the board, that, like, rather than getting the week off or something, you get off on Thursday and Friday, and that's it. But our college schedules are typically Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday. So if you have a Tuesday, Thursday class, it only meets once that week. And that just doesn't fly with college students. They don't want to do that. they don't want to come in for one day. So a lot of them will skip or will like say they're going away for Thanksgiving. So basically it's just a big wasted week at the very end of the semester. So like for me, I have to get a whole bunch of assignments out of the way the week before Thanksgiving because my students don't show up that week and or they have off Thursday and Friday. And then we come back the week after, there's that week, one more week, and then we're done. So it's like we have a week off at the very end of the semester with 2 weeks left, and then I come back and they have had a week off and I have to be like, okay, and now we're writing your final exam papers. And it just doesn't work. So it's a very stressful time as a teacher. So between that, I've been cast in a play that I'm on almost every fucking page of this script. So I'm starting that. Plus, it's the holidays and there's some crazy shit happening personally and all that. So it's been a time. And in that time, I've been kind of like falling back on all of this reality TV comfort stuff that we all love so much and not really exploring the new things that I want to watch. So instead, I've been just like watching every Hallmark Christmas movie that's been airing live and Bravo. And that kind of shit. So, like, I don't really have a whole lot, again, to talk about, even though there is stuff now to talk about, and very soon will be even more stuff to talk about. But I do have a little old bone to pick. And instead of kind of talking about, like, a show this week, let's talk about a theme, shall we? Let's switch it up. And let's talk about something that I've been having conversations with people, you know, coworkers, friends, people who work in similar fields for a long time now, especially during the pandemic, about the idea of empathy and how we don't have it anymore. So I just mentioned, you know, and explained my fucking teaching schedule. But so I have been teaching freshman level writing at a community college for, oh, I'm so old, 10 years now. And every semester, I talk about how it keeps getting worse, and I don't know how it keeps getting worse, but it does keep getting worse, and not just, like, the skill level it's the skill level, but it's not, like, it's not just that they're not taught the skills in, you know, their K-12 public school schooling, but that they lack skills like interpersonal skills and problem solving and critical thinking skills. And I don't know what the fuck has been happening in the last decade to precipitate this, but it's really worrying. And I'm starting to now see a lot of the stuff that I've talked about at school, and I also, you know, I work part-time at a church. I'm not a religious person, but I run a church office, and trying to like plan and see what's going on in the nonprofit realm as well is also super worrying when it comes to this idea of empathy. So like with my students, let's start there. I have a lot of students who they do not understand emotions. And that sounds weird to say, but what I mean by that is, like, they're so insular and so consumed, not just with their devices and their online personas and their social media and, like, they're experts at disassociating, you know, like, I do a unit at the beginning of the semester on social media use and whether it's positive or negative and how it impacts us, all that shit. And I always preface it by asking, okay, how much time do you think you spend on social media a day? And could you go without it for 24 hours? What would your day look like in 24 hours if you couldn't use social media? And I always get students who think they're not addicted to their phones, who are shocked to find out just how addicted to their phones they are. And they'll say stuff like, well, does YouTube count as social media? Well, what if I could watch YouTube on my computer instead of my phone? Would that count? What if I was on TikTok on my laptop? Like all this stuff. And they'll try to justify it and then come to the conclusion, no, I'm not addicted to my phone. I'd be fine. Like, I don't know what I would do in 24 hours without my phone, but I would be okay. And then they have them open their phones and go to their screen usage apps. And they're all like, oh, you spent 9 hours on your phone today. And they think that's like normal. And then I open mine. I'm like, okay, my most used app is Instagram. And I was on it for a daily average of 32 minutes. You all are on TikTok for 4 hours at a time, not just like in a day, at a time. So between TikTok, Snapchat, YouTube, all these apps on your phones, you are looking at your phones for up to 9 hours a day. It's usually students are somewhere between like 6.5 to 9 hours a day. So they are like completely dissociating. I forget which the word is. I should know this. I'm an English teacher, but I don't. That like they're completely just blocking the world out and just like in their phones. So when I then ask them to like think critically about, you know, marginalized groups, and you know, we've talked about like what's been going on in the news between Palestine and Israel, and we've talked about over the years things like I've given them assignment on like the anti-police brutality protests and Black Lives Matter and the genocide of trans people and like all of these things I've talked about over the years, and they just have no idea how to relate to it. Like even my students of color have no idea how empathy works or what it is. Like quite literally the assignment I've been working on the past couple weeks with them is an essay about empathy. And I give them a video called Lucky Zip Codes, and they watch it, and it's about people living in wealthy zip codes, but they're called, quote, lucky zip codes, not wealthy. And it has, luck has nothing to do with it. It's a different way of saying privilege. And I'm trying to like make them make that connection. And then I ask, what's the solution to this? How do we make more people more, quote unquote, lucky? And all of the sources I give them talk about empathy as the solution, right? Like walking a mile in someone else's shoes, putting yourself in their position, wondering like, if this was my kid, how would I deal with this? If this was my family, how would I treat this person? And I can like sometimes see the light bulb going off and sometimes not, which is troubling because they're living their lives entirely online and like not learning or interpreting or experiencing emotion in a lot of ways. Like they only know anxiety and anger. That's pretty much it. They don't know like healthy expressions of emotion. Or they don't like, if I say, how would you feel if, and they just stare at me as if they don't understand the exercise again of like putting yourself in someone else's position. It's wild. And I promise I have a point to all of this that's related to TV. So just stick with me for this sociology lesson. And then like I go to work at the church and I see like my boss, who's the priest at this church, is trying all of these new things and like trying all of these new ideas. And even just down to like, she's trying to make things seem more interesting by like making them more visually striking. You know, like we have a bulletin or a leaflet, however you want to think of it, every week that's, you know, like the readings and the hymns and all that stupid shit. But then like we put announcements of what's coming up at the end. And whereas we used to just put a wall of text at the end, because what else do you need? You know, like it's basically like, here are events coming up and here are some like community service organizations, some drives we're running, right? But we found that like no one was participating in those things anymore. So we're trying to like we were collecting cranberry sauce It's a school in inner city Philadelphia where like they're associated with a church, but they're not religious, but they do like community service. And they're providing 225 Thanksgiving meals to folks in Philadelphia. And we were providing the cranberry sauce for all of these meals. So, you know, like rather than just saying, hey, we're collecting 225 cans of fucking cranberry sauce, you know, we like put a, one week we ran a picture, a cartoon of a can of jelly cranberry sauce. The next week was a picture of someone wading in a cranberry bog. And then the last week was a picture of a giant Thanksgiving meal with a turkey and everything. Just to kind of like, I don't know, draw people's attention to like, hey, this is a time-sensitive Thanksgiving thing. Please look at this. And, you know, it doesn't work. No one cares. The conclusion I've come to is that no one really cares. We're trying to do things that are enticing families and kids and, you know, trying to get people to care and to come back and like actually attend events and simultaneously like give us money. But like the way that we used to do things isn't working anymore. And it's because of things like this, like not understanding empathy. Like, whereas people used to just like, especially members of our church used to just be like, oh, there is someone who needs something. I understand what that feels like. I need to help them. Now it's like, oh, someone needs something. I'm looking this way because I have this thing to go to and this thing to plan and these other things that I care about more. And we're like losing that feeling of empathy. And I'm now seeing that a lot. Here's my point. You can listen now if you've tuned me out on your drive to work. I've seen that so much in the past couple of weeks on the TV shows that I've been watching and the then subsequent reaction on social media, which is, again, all part of the problem, to that TV. So I want to talk a little bit from what happened this week on an episode of Catfish, which I might be the only freaking person in this country who is still watching Catfish. I don't care. I love Catfish. So for those of you who are living under a rock, Catfish, the MTV show where Neve Shulman like helps people on the internet find out if the people they're dating are real or if they're, you know, faking or whatever, but helps people get to their online relationships and meet these people in real life. The show is still on the air. It's gone through so many iterations. There was a Catfish UK. They're on their second permanent host, which is Cammy, who took over for Max. But then in between Max and Cammy were like two seasons of all guest hosts. But they're still on their bullshit. And they're still helping people who somehow are still falling prey to catfishing in the year 2023. And this week's episode made me... A lot of the episodes this season, actually, which is... We're on like episode almost 100 of season 8. That's how many episodes there have been of this show. A lot of the episodes this season have been really sad more than they've been like entertaining or over the top or, you know, aggravating or whatever. And a lot of them this season have been super depressing. Like there was one episode where there was a trucker who lived in Wyoming. But he spent so much of his time on the road driving a truck that he didn't have any friends. And I don't know what happened in his family life, but the only connection he has a grandmother and a grandfather. And they live in Florida, I think. But they're not near him. So, like, he doesn't really have anyone that he talks to consistently. He doesn't make relationships easily because he's never around in one place long enough to, like, put down roots. And he... you know, was like randomly online and got connected with this really hot girl who like he gave all this money to. And like, obviously anyone watching this is like, we know that this is not real, right? Like we know that this is that stupid fucking chain mail thing that your grandma gets on email where it's like, oh my God, this prince in Africa needs my help. I have to give them money. It's very much that. Like anyone with half a brain or who's been on the internet for longer than a day knows this is not real. But this guy was so lonely and so earnest and wanted connection so bad that he didn't even think twice that someone would lie to him on the internet. And it ended up that he got scammed out of thousands of dollars by like a crime syndicate in Africa, basically. And there was no solution to the story because they never met this person because it wasn't a person. It was like a group in Africa who scammed dudes in the United States. And that's kind of what happened in this week's episode of Catfish about Zach and Lexi. And Zach is this guy in Minnesota, and he's been burned so much by online dating and trying to find someone that he's very leery of who he talks to, and he is very suspicious of everyone. So he matched up with someone on Tinder at one point, and they were going to go on a date immediately, and he showed up to this person's house, and he got robbed at gunpoint for his Tinder date. Like, that would put anyone off of online dating, right? So then he like went to a matchmaker and they charged him $1,200 per date that he went on. And like, it just, I guess nothing ever was working out. So he was back on one of these like dating websites and he matched with this woman, Lexi. And, you know, again, he's very suspicious, but like, you know, she seems legit where she's sending him like snaps and, you know, like nothing about it screams suspicion, really. Like, she tried to initiate video calls and it was his schedule that wasn't working, which usually it's the opposite. Usually it's the person being catfished who's like, let's video chat. And the catfish is like, oh, I'm at work, or oh, I have bad service or whatever. No, it was him in this case. Like, he was the one putting it off. So it would seem all on the up and up. But there's also weird shit that, like, every once in a while she would ask him for like $20 for Chipotle. Like, once a week he would send her fucking Chipotle. Or $20 to buy Chipotle, or Chipotle gift cards, like weird shit like that. And then she would say messages like, oh, when are you going to spoil me, daddy? Which, like, I think is just an online girl thing now. Like, there are so many OnlyFans people or whatever who are like, oh my God, I need you to spoil me. Make it rain, daddy. And she would seem to be like one of those. But like, if he would say, oh, I don't have the money right now, she would be like, oh, that's okay. And they would keep talking. So it just seemed weird that they hadn't met, and he was also suspicious. So here comes catfish, right? They find out that the pictures and the person and the photos is not real. That someone is using this girl's pictures, who is actually very famous and has been dealing with catfish for a long time. And then we find out that Zach is talking to a team of people, a woman and a man, who have teamed up together to scam people out of their money on the internet and who have no fucking remorse about it. So this girl is pretending to be Lexi. Her name is Lacey. And she's like a voice on the phone when they call and when they, you know, like when they video chat. She makes sure the light is low because her face doesn't look like the girl in the photos, but she has blonde hair and is skinny and whatever. And has like a feminine voice, obviously, because she's a woman. So like that's how they get around all of this. And then, so Zach meets them. And then the whole thing is, he's like, look, I'm not, like, I knew that there was something suspicious. I knew something was rotten in the state of Denmark. But I need you all to understand, like, these are people you're fucking with. So Lacey has them meet her partner, who is a man. And he explains, like, I run social media for women who have OnlyFans. And I run their personal accounts to try to drive traffic to their OnlyFans accounts. And, you know, there are all these men who are willing to objectify women and give them money. So we take advantage of that and we take their money. Like, they send us money, they send us gift cards. So, like, you know, why can't we make off better than this, like, when the pickings are so easy? Like, basically just saying, you know, we scam people. Yeah, of course we do. If they're willing to give away their money, why wouldn't we take it? And it's just so strange. And they have this guy, Levi is the guy who runs this account, just has no remorse. He literally says, that's the internet. But that's not the internet. You know, like, the fact that young people have this idea in their heads that, like, what is the internet? The internet is lying. The internet is scamming. The internet is stealing. The internet is, like, anonymous. No, there are real people. And that's, like, this guy Zach is standing there as if to say, I think of me every time you go to slide into someone's DMs to be like, oh, you subscribe to this OnlyFans. Can you send me $20 for Chipotle? There is a person whose $20 you are taking. That is not like some ethereal money that is appearing out of the ether. That is someone's $20. That is my $20. And he is standing there and be like, I am a real person who has been burned over and over and over again, and who now doesn't trust anyone because of people like you. Think about that. And he just like has a blank look on his face and doesn't give a shit. And then Cammy's standing there like, what about the woman whose photos you are stealing? You are scamming. And the guy says he talks to hundreds of men with this profile. Like, you are scamming hundreds of guys out of money, out of time. Who's to say that they're not gonna like find this girl and step up on her? Who's to say that you're not talking to someone who will cross her path in real life and go off on her or stalk her or whatever? Like, you are putting this real woman's life, this woman whose photos you have stolen, in danger as well. And he just stares at them. The girl, Lacey, on the team was like, oh, I didn't think about that. You're right. But like, like, catfishing obviously isn't new, and like, a lot of people do it for entertainment purposes. A lot of people do it for like mental health reasons, or, you know, like comfort, whatever. There are thousands of reasons people have given for doing it on this show over the past 10 or however many years it's been on the air. But, like, there's been so many examples in the past couple of years of people who make these profiles with the intention of taking money from people. And that is so wild to think that they just don't care, that they're doing this to dozens, sometimes hundreds or thousands of people, and they are just stealing money and not caring or thinking about it. It's fucking crazy that the internet has destroyed us in this way. I mean, the internet has ruined humanity in so many ways. I'm not going to say there's nothing good about the internet, because there is. Like, you know, the connection aspect of it, the empathy that some people do show on the internet of, oh, there's someone in trouble who needs something. Like, every time I see a GoFundMe and then I click on it and there's thousands of dollars raised, like, that's so nice. Like, one of the Instagram accounts I follow is a pair of corgis, Hammy and Olivia. And Olivia died a couple of weeks ago. And the outpouring of, like, grief and support, and, like, again, this is why I don't follow a lot of animal accounts, because this is my biggest fear, is that they're going to die and I'm going to be sad. And it happened. You know, like, all these people wanting to help in some way, and the guy behind the Hammy and Olivia account who posts the videos and runs it, like, put up a fundraiser for something to help other animal owners. And within, like, hours, it had raised something like $30,000. And seeing stuff like that is so heartwarming. But then for every one of those, there is someone who is, like, scamming someone on GoFundMe, right? Like, there's someone who's setting up a bogus GoFundMe. Or they're setting up a GoFundMe because they're like, I can't afford my rent. Give me all of your money. And then, you know, you find out that's completely fake. So, like, for every good side of the internet, there's a downside. And I feel like I don't know if it's the internet or the age or just, like, the technology or TV even, because reality TV might be at fault for part of this too. Like, I'm seeing over on Beverly Hills Housewives, if you watch that, the first episode of the season, or maybe the second, I forget which, had Erica going to therapy and talking about the shit with her ex-husband, Tom, and all of his legal problems and how he stole all this money from innocent people, from victims of, like, burn victims. Like, this was the case where he, like, set up these accounts for people who were injured in a gas fire, I want to say, in the explosion. I think that was the Tom Girardi thing. And he set up this fund and then was, like, siphoning money out of it for people who, you know, like, lost their loved ones and their homes and were living with, like, enormously challenging third-degree burns for their entire lives. And on the show, when we saw this play out, like, Erica had this whole air of, well, that has nothing to do with me. Why should I apologize for what he did? I didn't know he was doing it. Why is this on me? Why am I supposed to feel sorry? What am I supposed to say to make their lives better? What does it matter what I think? And it's just, like, the narcissism of our current state of affairs is beyond, right? And because the backlash against her was so strong about, like, even if you had no idea, why is it so hard for you to say, I feel so bad for these victims. I am going to try to do everything in my power to help them. Like, whether I liked it or not, I was made a part of this. That's all that needs to happen. And, like, the government is coming, or the courts, whatever, is coming after her possessions because they were given to her by Tom. And Tom, like, he's filed for bankruptcy, or he needs to, like, pay back this money or whatever the fuck it is. So they're selling off shit from his office and all this stuff. And apparently they were looking for these, like, really expensive earrings that Erica had that may or may not have been purchased with this money. And they needed to sell them back, basically, or, like, use them as collateral. And she's wearing them on the show last season. On the show. And then not handing them over. So this is still a topic of conversation, because it's, like, so flagrant and so blatantly awful that, like, there are people who need this money that your husband stole from them, and those earrings that you are wearing on camera and not wanting to give back because you like them so much are going to help these people. And rather than just give up your one fucking pair of diamond goddamned earrings, you're bragging about them on TV and laughing about these people on TV. is wild, and people hate, I'm one of them, people hated her for this. So she's trying a rehab season where she's like, I'm not fighting this season. I'm going to go to therapy. So we see her go to therapy, and her therapist being like, you need to find empathy for these people. And she literally says, how do I do that? How do I find it? Which, how the fuck do you explain to a 50-something year old woman how to feel empathy for another human being, especially one who lost their home, their livelihood, and their skin in a fire? How do you explain to someone that they should feel bad for those people? My mind was short-circuited when she said that. How did we get to this place? And again, like, I'm sure it's part the internet, it's part reality TV in general. Like, we went from putting people in crazy situations like Survivor and that kind of thing and watching what would happen to just documenting everyone's lives and raising people up to this like status of celebrity just for existing, that this seemed inevitable that we would come to this place where they're so disconnected from actual reality because they're living TV reality that they don't know basics like how to feel human fucking emotion. Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane. And I can't get over it. And I've just seen so many examples of it on TV and in life recently that it's been on my mind. And when I watched this week's Catfish yesterday, I couldn't not talk about it. Like, I don't get it. And why we use the internet so often for the purpose of destroying people and things and destroying happiness in general, I'll never get. Like, we all know I'm a Christmas person. I have never been shamed for loving Christmas and or for wanting to like start decorating or listening to music or watching movies or whatever it is prior to whatever date Thanksgiving is until the internet. Like, there was no one in my life who was like, it's November 1st, don't watch Home Alone, until Facebook, when that stupid cartoon that we see every year gets reposted of the turkey pecking Santa saying, wait your turn, fat boy. That's been around forever. And like, happy Thanksgiving week, but need to remind you that this is a faux patriotic bullshit colonialist holiday that is based on a lie. So I'm at the point, Thanksgiving, as far as I'm concerned, does not exist. It was invented as a day off at the end of the year. Go back and listen to my Thanksgiving podcast from either last year or the year before. Can't even remember when I did it, when I reviewed the Taste the Nation episode with Padma Lakshmi, and I went on a tear about how awful Thanksgiving is as a holiday. But like, the internet emboldened people to like steal other people's joy. And again, so did, I think, reality TV, where we get so used to like upholding the worst aspects of people for entertainment's sake that now we've just created a generation of awful people. And that's really sad. It's really sad. We've created a generation of people who are purposefully terrible and exist only to tear other people down and or to steal from them and or to lay claim to their identities or whatever. Or they're completely unfeeling and unaware of what it is to feel or experience emotions. It's so strange. It's so strange. But you know what makes me feel emotions transitioning into my recommendation of the week is Christmas, going back to all of that. So let's talk about this week of Hallmark. So this week on La Hallmark Channel is Thanksgiving week, which, if you are uninitiated, this is the week where Hallmark tries to kill me and all of us, because they are premiering 8 movies in 5 days. So starting on Wednesday, they are airing one movie on Wednesday, one movie on Thursday, Thanksgiving night, two on Friday, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. And also, again, for the uninitiated, this is when all of the, like, heavy hitters really come out. Like, this is the week that Hallmark puts its best movies with its biggest stars on the air, because this is typically its highest rated week of the year. Partially because people are just getting into the Christmas spirit because Thanksgiving, partially because there's nothing else on these nights because, like, regular cable and broadcasting take the night or the week off because they assume people are, like, doing other things. Hallmark, no. They're like, we're going to market specifically to that crowd who doesn't want to watch a football game but also can't get off their couch because they're full of turkey. And it works for them. So coming up this week, let's talk about all of them, and then I might recommend a couple. So on Wednesday, on the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries channel, A Season for Family, Maddie's adopted son Wesley has just one Christmas wish: to meet his brother Cody, who was adopted into a different family. So this is two adopt brothers who are adopted separately, one by a single mom, one by a single dad, come together, and what do you think happens to the parents? There you go. So that is on Wednesday, and that's starring Brendan Penny, who is a Hallmark staple. Then Thursday, I'm so excited. Thursday night on the Hallmark channel, Catch Me If You Claws. Avery Quinn is an aspiring news anchor who's finally getting her big break on her station's Christmas morning newscast. But that's put in jeopardy when she captures an intruder in her home wearing a red suit, claiming to be Chris, Santa's son, who is on his first mission. This sounds batshit crazy and silly and stupid, and insane. And also, Santa's son is played by Luke McFarlane, and I think we all know my feelings about him at this point. The man is gorgeous. The man is wonderful. The man is my dream. And just the thought that Santa could be as hot as Luke McFarlane is makes me happy. So it sounds kind of like the Santa Claus meets Bros. And I, again, anytime Luke McFarlane is in a Christmas movie, I don't take it for granted. I thought he was done years ago. He's not. He's here, and I'm hoping he's here to stay. But regardless, he made this movie, and I'm going to watch it. And it sounds silly and fun. Friday night at 6 p.m., the first of two movies, Letters to Santa. When young siblings receive a magic pen from Santa that appears to be granting wishes, they request a Christmas gift they want more than anything, for their separated parents to reunite. And that stars Katie Leclerc and Rafael de la Fuente, who was on Dynasty on the CW and was also on Empire. That's where I know him from. He was what's-his-face's Jussie Smollett's character's boyfriend on Empire. That one doesn't sound very good, which makes sense. It's on at 6 o'clock at night. 8 o'clock on Friday, Holiday Road. When bad weather leaves each of them stranded at the airport for the holidays, a tech entrepreneur, a travel writer, a devoted mother and her son, a stubborn senior, an enigmatic woman with a hint of mystery, a couple traveling from Hong Kong, and a social media influencer all agree to rent a shared van to embark on a road trip to Denver. This sounds like fun. Love a road trip movie. Love the reference to National Lampoon in the Holiday Road title. Seems like way too many characters for an hour and 23 minute movie, so I'm going to assume that most of them get short shrift, which I don't always love, but that also sounds very entertaining. Saturday at 6, Christmas in Notting Hill. Famous soccer star Graham Savoy has always been too busy for love, but when he comes home to Notting Hill for Christmas, he changes his mind after meeting Georgia, a visiting American and the one person who has no idea who he is. Cute idea, starring Sarah Ramos and William Moseley. Don't know who either of them are. I've definitely seen her in a movie before, but couldn't place her. Another abroad Hallmark Christmas movie. They're doing so many this year. We already got the one in France. We already got the one in Germany. We're getting this one in Notting Hill. There's one coming up soon in Norway. I'm down for this. But soccer star, meh, don't really care. Here's the big swing of the whole weekend. Saturday at 8 p.m. is always when they put their biggest movie. Like, that used to be the Candace Cameron Bure time slot, because Bill Abbott, who used to run Hallmark, had a boner for her, and now he has a boner for her on their own channel. But this is the big one. So it's Haul Out the Holly Lit Up, the sequel to last year's Haul Out the Holly, which was more comedy than romance and very silly and very fun and one of its best movies ever, and especially last year in a crop of really strong movies, one of the best of the year. Okay, here we go. Haul Out the Holly Lit Up. As the holidays approach, Emily and Jared are looking forward to celebrating the holidays together again, this time as a couple. Emily, now embracing Evergreen Lane's uniquely festive spirit, is ready to work with Jared, Ned, Mary Louise, and Pamela to make this year's Christmas celebration the best yet, even if being the HOA president's girlfriend doesn't stop those dreaded decorating citations. LOL. So if you watched last year's Haul Out the Holly, you know exactly what all these references are. And basically this was a big, like, it was a community movie where a bunch of people in a town have the HOA in the town, like, requires them to decorate for Christmas in a certain way. And that's how they spread their Christmas cheer, is like having all these neighborhood events. And they have a neighborhood that people like drive to just to see their Christmas displays. Kind of like Deck the Halls, that movie with Matthew Broderick and Danny DeVito. Only not awful. And it's a really great ensemble cast. It's Lacey Chabert, the queen of Christmas movies at Hallmark, who also had this past week's Merry Scottish Christmas. It's Wes Brown, another stalwart. Melissa Peterman from Reba. Stephen Tobolowsky, very famous character actor. And Ellen Travolta, who is John's sister. And it was just a really sweet movie. It was very funny, very silly. And I'm looking forward to that one as well. Okay, Sunday at 6 o'clock, our Christmas mural. Olivia is a single mom who returns home for Christmas. Her mom secretly enters her into a mural contest. She wins, but partners with a teacher, Will, to create a Christmas masterpiece. Don't care. Saturday at 8 o'clock, another big one. A Biltmore Christmas. Lucy Hardgrove is a screenwriter who lands the job of a lifetime when she's hired to pen the script for a remake of the beloved holiday movie classic, His Merry Wife, which was filmed in 1947 at beautiful, historic Biltmore House. When the head of the studio isn't satisfied with the ending, Lucy wrote, because it deviates from the original's feel-good conclusion, he sends Lucy to Biltmore Estate for research and inspiration. And of course, she meets the man and falls in love. Now, why I'm looking forward to this one is, I mean, the Biltmore is a great place, but it's the pairing of the leads is Bethany Joy Lenz, who is from One Tree Hill and was also in the best Hallmark movie of 2021, An Unexpected Christmas, and Christopher Plaha, who I love and have always loved, dating back to his days on True Calling and North Shore. He's been in a bunch of, like, big movies lately, so good for him. He was in Jurassic World, Dominion, and also Wonder Woman, 1984. And I love the two of them. They have both been great in separate things. I'm looking forward to them being together. So there are a lot of movies to recommend this week. I'm going to say, if you can only watch one, the one that seems to be, like, the most accessible is Catch Me If You Claws. That one seems, like, over-the-top silly and, like, you don't need to any outside knowledge. And also Luke McFarlane, you can't go wrong. But if you're like a Hallmark person, or if you don't mind that you're going to be watching a sequel without watching the original, Haul Out the Holly Lit Up. The first one was very cute. I'm anticipating the second one being fun as well. Or A Biltmore Christmas. Take your pick. There is at least one a night that seems fun. Okay? And I've been disappointed this season. This week's movies also have not been very good. So there's that. But like I said, this is the heavy hitters week. This is, if you're going to watch any movie any week ever, just like out of curiosity, morbid or genuine, this is the week to do it. Tune in on Thanksgiving for Catch Me If You Claws, or then throughout the weekend for these other very silly, very fun, nostalgic, easy, comfortable. It is, again, the world has been designed to steal our joy lately. People suck. Watch something that'll make you feel warm and fuzzy. For me, it's these dumb, silly, stupid movies, even the ones I don't like. I light my Christmas candle. I either make some tea, or on Friday, it was not a good movie. I had some wine. Get you some wine. Make a little Christmas cocktail. Get out a box of cookies. What? Just get under a blanket. And that's Christmas to me. That's warm and fuzzy. That, how do I overcome this world that lacks empathy? I create my own cozy feeling. So yeah. Happy Thanksgiving if you're celebrating. Happy beginning of Christmas season to all the Grinches who say you have to wait until after Thanksgiving is over. And yeah. there's a lot of new holiday shit coming up that I want to watch, and hopefully I will have watched some of it by next week, although I might just be like, I don't know, splayed out under my Christmas tree in shock from all of these 8 Hallmark movies I've tried to watch over a 5-day period. So maybe I'll be back next week with a new episode, or maybe I will be dead from exhaustion and sugary sweetness from these movies. I don't know. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and I'll be back next. Why did I do this sign off if I just did another one? Oh, I'm stupid. I'll be back with another episode soon with more discussion, dissection, dissemination. That is not my tagline. That is Race Chaser. Where is my head right now? With more recaps, more news, more analyses, and more recommendations. Have a good week, everyone.